bring in. Davis says those in his district who raise corn and soybeans are willing to give up the direct payment subsidies and do their part to tackle a $16.6 trillion national debt.
And the key, though, is all of the ag sectors working together to find out what's going to work. Yeah, it's just like what we should do to govern out in Congress on every single piece of legislation. There's got to be some give and take.
John Robinson says there is much more at stake in the new farm bill than helping farmers facing production losses. He says more than half the money in the farm bill goes toward nutrition programs like SNAP, also known as food stamps. One industry expert says Davis, a former staffer to neighboring Republican Congressman John Shempkes of Collinsville, can have some success in this area.
The congressman's connections to a lot of folks in central Illinois who have been through those battles should help prepare him very well to assume a leadership position that we all expect him to take.
That's John Scholl, president of the Washington-based American Farmland Trust, a conservation group that works with Congress to protect soil and water. Despite his optimism for Davis and what he calls a renewed sense of bipartisanship, he says items like SNAP and the overall federal budget could lead to a contentious debate.
The really big difference comes in the amount of money that's being cut from the SNAP program or nutrition programs in general. And it's a difference of, you know, almost $100 million. And trying to reconcile that is going to be very contentious. And it's going to be, I think, really something that's going to make, perhaps more than anything else, a farm bill difficult to attain.
Scholl says it could take until the end of the year before the House and Senate agree on the measure. That's where the contacts that Davis developed while a congressional staffer could help, according to Kevin Johnson. He's a one-time staffer for former Congressman Tim Johnson, no relation, who's now with the Illinois Chemical and Fertilizer Association.
You're not going to be an expert on every issue, even if you're on that committee. I think as a staffer and a member, that's your biggest thing, is just trying to keep your ear to the ground of what issues are coming your way so you're ahead of those issues.
Davis says there's a renewed sense of optimism in Congress after members got bogged down last year in partisan bickering.
Some of my best friends in my freshman class are Democrats. You know, we're willing to work together. The rank and file are willing to work together. And I believe when you saw this last election, it was an election that both sides thought they would swing, you know, their way. Neither side did. And I think that's what shows a lot of members of Congress that major pieces of legislation shouldn't just be about political partisanship and polarization.
Davis says that as the only Illinois Republican on the House Ag Committee, he feels the need to take a statewide view on issues. With that in mind, he and freshman Democrat Bill Enyard of Belleville have co-sponsored a measure separate from the Farm Bill that seeks to help commercial river traffic on the Mississippi River during droughts and floods.
And if we don't have access to that navigation channel down the Mississippi to get that product out, to get our coal and get our corn and get our soybeans out there, then we don't have jobs. So it is a crucial element to our Midwestern success economically, and that's why we're trying to lead in a bipartisan way on this issue.
Oklahoma Republican and House Agriculture Committee Chair Frank Lucas says he'll move ahead with a markup or formal revision and drafting of the next farm bill by May 15th. Congressman Davis says he's excited to have a seat at the table, but also expects some late nights as that markup process begins. As for John Robinson, while he supports Davis, he says he prefers not to deal with the politicians. He's saving most of his feedback on the farm bill for staff at the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
I want to deal more with the people that are running the programs because they are wanting to know how the programs are working out in the countryside. And they think talking to farmers is very valuable.
The Senate Agriculture Committee was expected to start its own markup process early next week. Congressman Davis believes the new farm bill could be approved by both chambers by September, around the time the last provisions of the old farm bill expire. And some updated information on the farm bill. As of late yesterday, well, the Senate Ag Committee was waiting to finish bullet points before releasing its initial draft of the farm bill. Known as the chairman's mark, the bill language nonetheless became public yesterday. A political correspondent reported that there was some process, stealing some thunder from committee chairwoman Debbie Stabenow. That's correspondent Jerry Hagstrom. He said the bill is called the Agriculture Reform Food and Jobless Act of 2013. The Senate Agriculture Committee is searching for a budget score that shows a $23 billion reduction in spending for USDA programs over 10 years compared to current farm and food programs, while the bill drafts policy for 5 years That measure would cost $953 billion over 10 years if Stabenow hit her budget mark, and the release of the Senate bill starts a rush of activity on that legislation. And as mentioned, the House Ag Committee will release its mark before the end on today as well. It's 12:45. Cable TV is full of reality shows that are full of stereotypes about white working class people. Mob Wives, Honey Boo Boo, and Duck Dynasty. TV critic Eric Deggan says that these days it's easier to stereotype white subcultures than black or brown ones because it's easy to forget that white stereotypes are just as ugly.
MTV tried cashing in on the redneck TV trend with its own hyped-up platform for young Southern kids behaving badly, Buck Wild. And this is what it took to get it off the air.
Budding reality star Shane Gandy was discovered dead in his SUV, the victim of accidental carbon monoxide poisoning. Now, 1 week later, MTV is making the bombshell decision to cancel his hit show, Buck Wild.
Gandy was the star of a so-called reality TV show that played like a Southern fried version of Jersey Shore. It stars a dim-witted crew of young people in West Virginia drinking hard and riding pickup trucks through ditches filled with mud.
Oh, shit! Carrie, you ever been mudding?
Yeah, I used to get mud all the time in high school.
Oh, yeah? Well, you ain't never been mudding with me.
Small wonder some locals complain the show was a black mark on West Virginia. It highlighted oversexed, undereducated kids whose favorite pastimes included joyriding inside construction equipment.
Oh, my.
Go, go, go.
Southern-based exploitation TV shows are only the beginning of reality TV's Caucasian cliches. There are the violent, in-your-face Italian ladies in VH1's Mob Wives.
I've poisoned people. I've shot them. I stabbed my last boyfriend in front of his mother.
The backwards, rural kids wandering around New York City in TLC's Breaking Amish.
Dropped out of school early.
Third or fourth grader can probably read three times better than I can.
And the lustful brides in My Big Fat American Gypsy Wedding.
My first husband was my third cousin. Our family believes in incest.
That's a big pile of the worst stereotypes about white working class people around. And here's the thing. There aren't nearly as many shows like this about African Americans or Latinos. Late last year, the Oxygen Channel tried to create a new one, developing a pilot featuring rapper Shawty Low.
So you guys, he might be known as a rapper, but here in Atlanta, he's known for having 11 kids and 10 baby mamas.
The backlash against this travesty was immediate and powerful.
Outrage and calls now for cancellation over a new reality show that's about to hit the airwaves. So here's what it's called, All My Baby's Mamas.
Radio personalities complained on air. Harsh coverage came from CNN and Fox News, and more than 30,000 protesters signed a petition against the show on change.org. And it worked. Oxygen announced it wouldn't develop the series. So why haven't these other shows stereotyping white people seen protest just as strong? I suspect it's because too many folks see stereotypes as a problem mostly for people of color. We've got lots of practice criticizing degrading images of black and brown people. Activists know how to gather the news stories, book the media appearances, and assemble the petitions to press their case. Advertisers get nervous, and programmers think twice. What many forget is it can be just as easy to stereotype white working-class folks, and just as hard to scrub those stereotypes off our TV screens.
NPR TV critic Eric Deggans.
Support for WILL comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the standard all-wheel drive Subaru Outback with an EPA highway rating of 29 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at their showroom on Route 45 in Savoy or at SubaruofChampaign.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 10th of May, 2013. It's the birthday of Mother Maybelle Carter, born in Copper Creek, Virginia, 1909. When she was 18 years old, she and her sister Sarah and her brother-in-law A.P. Carter cut an audition record at a little studio in Bristol, Tennessee for RCA Victor Records. The Carter family, which gave us Wabash Cannonball, Wildwood Flower, and Will the Circle Be Unbroken. It's the birthday of Fred Astaire, born in Omaha, 1899. Went to New York with a sister, Adele. They danced in a series of hit musicals on the Broadway and London stage, and then she went off to marry Lord Charles Cavendish. And Fred went to Hollywood for a screen test, where a Paramount executive wrote about him, "Can't act, can't sing, balding, can dance a little." It was on this day, 1749, the 10th and final volume of Henry Fielding's novel, The History of Tom Jones, A Foundling, was published. The novel was still a very new form in English. Other fiction writers tried to fob off their work as factual or as some kind of moral allegory. Fielding only wanted to write a good story. Tom Jones, the story of Tom, who's dropped on the doorstep of Squire Allworthy as a newborn, raised by the squire as his son, a generous young man who loves women, gets into all sorts of sexual adventures, falls for the neighboring squire's daughter, Sophia, but neither Sophia's father nor his own adopted father will sanction their marriage because Tom is illegitimate. Tom gets friendly with some local girls. He gets kicked out of his household, moves to London. Sophia wants to marry Tom, but she's all set to marry Squire Allworthy's nephew, and then she runs off and follows Tom to London and finds him. Here's a poem for today by Louisa Fletcher, The Land of Beginning Again. I wish that there were some wonderful place in the land of beginning again, where all our mistakes and all our heartaches and all of our poor, selfish grief could be dropped like a shabby old coat at the door and never put on again. I wish we could come on it all unaware, like the hunter who finds a lost trail, and I wish that the one whom our blindness had done the greatest injustice of all could be there at the gates like an old friend that waits for the comrade he's gladdest to hail. We would find all the things we intended to do but forgot and remembered too late, little praises unspoken, little promises broken, and all the thousand and one little duties neglected that might have perfected the day for one less fortunate. It wouldn't be possible not to be kind in the land of beginning again, and the ones we misjudged and the ones whom we grudged their moments of victory here would find in the grasp of our loving hand clasp more than penitent lips could explain. So I wish that there were some wonderful